Our Two Cents, episode 84 with me, Rosh.
And Nam. And today we are talking about
Indiana Jones.
So,
but it's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been a while. Our last episode was on Ted Lasso. We've had lots happening. So this is our most common excuse for any new listeners. We have a lot happening in our personal lives. But yeah, so we are back.
Well, it's not our own lives, really. It's
true. That's true.
It's family life.
Oh, when you come from a big brown family, yeah, that's kind of what happens.
Everybody's life is your life.
Exactly. Anyway, so we are back with our latest episode. We are talking about Indiana Jones and the final film in his franchise, which is The Dial of Destiny. But we thought, since we're going to be talking about that anyway, we thought it would be nice to have a look back at Indiana Jones.
Yeah, because we've been doing a rewatch in lead up to the new movie.
And we just have thoughts.
Thoughts.
Which we wanted to share. Because we think they have some value.
Sure.
You know, I mean, we are called Our Two Cents. Yeah. You know? Our value isn't much, but there is some of it.
Yeah. Two cents anyway. Still worth it, as far as I'm concerned.
Anyway, hey, it's still money. Whatever. Yeah. Not that we're making any.
Oh, my friend. $20 is $20. $20.
Not that we're making any money out of this podcast, but anyway. Anyway, what I was going to say was, before we start, this is just, you know, these are for people who have just started listening to us on YouTube. We are going to get better in our videos as our skills get better. Yeah. And by our, I mean mine. And for those of you who are listening on the Spotify or any other podcast platforms, nothing really changes for you guys as such. So, but yeah, please come say hi to us on our socials and all that stuff. You'll find all our links in the description box below on YouTube. And on our Spotify account and all on our other podcast platforms. So yeah, we'd love to interact and say hi. Anyway, let's jump straight into the first part of our episode, which is just a bit of an introduction to Indiana Jones. In case you were living under a rock, you have no idea who he is.
Who Indiana Jones is.
Yeah. So who is he?
Indiana Jones.
I'm sorry, Dr. Indiana.
Dr. Henry Jones. Oh my gosh. It's amazing. Is a professor of archaeology / an archaeologist, adventurer.
Treasure hunter.
Not a gunfighter, although sometimes he does.
And he's definitely not a librarian.
He's not a librarian.
This is a very mummy
reference. Who gallivants around the world trying to find things that should be in a museum, as he likes to say. Yep. And it's his adventures and all the people he meets along the way, too.
So the person who plays Indiana Jones, once again, if you've been living under a rock, is a very, very charismatic and amazing Harrison Ford. A.K.A. Han Solo, A.K.A. Indiana Jones, and all of the
others. And will always be Indiana Jones for me, because I grew up with Indiana Jones more so than Han Solo, because we got into Star Wars later in life.
Yep.
But yeah, Indiana Jones is where Harrison just, you know. And anybody who has been listening to this podcast will know how much we love, and by we, I mean me, loves Indiana Jones. Loves Harrison Ford. Indiana Jones too, but Harrison Ford. And will watch anything, absolutely anything that he's in, because I just love him. And yeah, that is basically the man behind
one of the
greatest characters ever.
So basically, the whole Indiana Jones franchise essentially started, what year did it start in? 1981. So 1981 was the first film that came out, which was The Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yes. And we'll talk about the films in a bit.
Yeah.
But it was the brainchild, essentially, of Steven Spielberg and George Lucas, mm-hmm. essentially. So very interesting right from the start.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got, obviously Star Wars comes from George Lucas.
Yeah.
And like Steven Spielberg has given us like so much stuff.
So many things.
Yeah, I think just naming one is unfair.
Yeah.
But I think for me, the definitive Steven Spielberg for me, probably I'd say two things. That would be Jurassic Park, the first one.
Yeah.
And E.T.
Yeah.
You know? So like, as a kid, loving that, and then, you know, finding out that, oh my gosh, I mean, Indiana Jones is also him.
I'd put Close Encounters in there as well.
True.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, that is a good film. But, you know, we know the gravitas behind Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. So, you know, this is the brainchild of these two very, very brilliant men who also happen to be friends.
Yeah.
Which I think we'll have a chat about in a bit.
I mean, I'm like, yeah, and then I'm like, yeah.
It doesn't always work out.
Just because you're friends doesn't mean
it doesn't mean
you
that
have to
you
take
make
every
the best.
Single piece of exactly of idea from exactly. your friends.
But I like the concept that they've come up with. So if you haven't, if you don't know who I am, like, so just a bit about. This I think this is important when it comes to this. So you're a writer. So Rosh is a writer. I am a so I love history, right? Plus I've studied history and I teach as well, right?
Yeah.
So for me, anything to do with history and archaeology, it's like I'm down, right? So Indiana Jones is, and unfortunately, he is not a character that I've technically grown up with him. But because we didn't have, you know, access to everything constantly, I haven't watched his films all fully. So I still think that even though I am very familiar with the character, I had not properly watched the films until 10 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've watched them like
so
when
I'd say
I was
about
a
10
kid.
Years ago, yes.
Then, yeah.
So in the last decade is when I've truly been familiar with him, right? Anyway, so concept I think is absolutely amazing. Archaeologists going the on best. These adventures, all of that. And I like the structure of all the films.
Yeah.
I like the fact, I think, look, correct me if I'm wrong. So obviously before this, you know, there were a lot of other films, you know, the Mummy films had come out. This is obviously not the Brendan Fraser ones. Duh. But like the old Mummy films and like, the, you know, those old horror films and stuff.
Yeah,
so
like
Abbott
and Costello and all
that. So we've had like those pseudo historian archaeologist type characters around, right? But I feel like as a concept he feels, and yes, we have to acknowledge the fact that he came out in the 80s, so it's still not like, it's still a very fantastical version of an archaeologist.
Oh yeah, of course.
You know, there's very few archaeologists that I've, you know, read about, or I've met a few but not many who carry a whip and dress like him and even look like him, so you know. I think as a concept he's quite unique, so I really appreciate the fact that despite, you know, whatever anyone might think about these films, Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, I think they did a great job of like creating this character. And of course, you know, Harrison Ford as well. I feel like I literally can't picture anybody else playing
him. I mean, who could have? No one,
right?
At that time, who was like, I mean, he wasn't big because just before, because if Raiders was 81, then A New Hope was 77.
And so not
so
that much.
It wasn't that much time for him to like take off and be like this, you know, big thing. So Raiders was kind of the thing that pushed him forward. And everybody was like, who is this guy? Yeah, I really can't think of anyone else at the time. Who could have possibly... It had to be someone new.
Yeah.
I think in the sense that he had been working for a while, but, like, it wasn't
But not,
anything
like, huge
big.
In terms of star power.
Huge.
Yeah.
So it had to be someone who was going to become star power.
Also, I think a character like this, like, because he's so... And I think this is a good segue in talking about Indiana Jones as a character. He's very... like, the things that he goes through.
You know?
There's a lot of action in it. He's jumping on things. He's falling off things. He's very clumsy, which is, I love that.
I love that.
You know, he's not a very suave character, but physically as well, he's put through the paces. He's put through a lot. And yes, I get that there are stunt doubles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But still, you know, it's a hard slog. So you do need someone who is willing to do that.
Yeah.
And I think, like, you know, we know that Harrison Ford is like that now. He's in his 80s and he's still doing this kind of stuff. So obviously he has that kind of work ethic. But I think even as a young actor, to find a young actor who is willing to do that much, to put themselves, and I think, like, someone who's hungry enough for it would really do that, rather than someone who's already a big star and is like, yeah, no, I don't really need to.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody would have done it, to be honest.
I really can't think of anybody else who,
like,
would do
anyone
it.
Anyone big at the time would have been like, what is this? No.
Like, I haven't even heard, and I've tried looking. You know how they've always, like, who are the, like, who else was, like, an option?
Yeah.
For Indiana Jones. I literally cannot find anything else.
I don't think so, because, again, because Stephen and George are friends, so, like, you know, Stephen was on the set of A New Hope a lot. And so, like, they all kind of knew each other. That is one way that would have worked. But I honestly can't even think of anyone.
I can't think of anyone either. So if anyone has heard...
It's already perfect because it's Harrison Ford.
True. So if anyone has heard of, like, casting alternatives to Harrison Ford, like, you have some kind of, like, other information, please, you know, leave a comment or, like, hit us up on socials and let us know, because I would actually really like to know, because I cannot picture anybody else playing him at all. Anyway, so let's jump into the next bit, which is talking about the original trilogy.
Yes.
Which is, the first one is Raiders of the Lost Ark, the second one is Temple of Doom, and the third one is Last Crusade. And why the original trilogy is, like, it sounds like as if we're talking about Star Wars, like, the original trilogy.
The original trilogy.
But it is important to, I think, distinguish between the original trilogy and the two new additions that we've had in the recent, well, one just came out last week. So I think that is really important. So I think let's start off with Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is your favorite.
Yes. Oh
my God. I will talk about it why at the end.
Yeah.
But it is your favorite. So it came out, what year did it come out? 1981, yes.
Yeah.
So 1981, and is directed by
Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, I know. I'm waiting for you to say it.
I didn't know you were leaving a break for me. Oh my God. Anyway.
Okay, so what is that about?
Well, I mean, that's the origin, isn't it? You know, Indy in his professor life.
Mm.
And then he gets the call to basically go and find the Ark of the Covenant.
Yep.
Which is ripe in lots of biblical elements.
Mm. And who are the villains? The Nazis.
Because the Nazis are pretty much the villain. They're not in the second one, but they are in the third one.
Yeah.
And the fourth and the fifth.
Fourth were the Russians.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Mm. Anyway, so we've got, you know, this intro to this really fascinating character, but I really like the story as well. So as you said, it's, you know, they're looking for the Lost Ark, the Ark of the Covenant. Yeah. So it is quite, like, they've gone in with a very ambitious plot line.
Oh, yeah. Like, to say that it's, like, just a, you know, quick and easy get the job done plot, that's not true, because a lot of stuff happens along the way and a lot of things slip through their hands, and then, like, at the end you think, oh my God, is this even going to happen? And then, you know, they get it, but, like, yeah, a lot of stuff goes down.
And honestly, I think this is not, we shouldn't talk about details, because I think people, if you haven't watched it, you should watch it for yourself.
Where have you been this whole time? But if you haven't, I mean, you really just got to watch it for yourself, because it's such a thrilling ride, the whole thing. It's great seeing him, not just by himself, like, there's so many people who surround him.
The cast is great.
Like, Karen Allen plays Marion Ravenwood, and John Rhys-Davies plays Sulla, who is great as well. And we've got Donald Elliott, who plays Marcus Brody. Yeah, I just think that there's just so much, like, I don't even know, like, crispiness and yumminess to the first one. Like, it's just...
Because it's fresh. It actually feels fresh. I'll be honest, like, even watching it now,
yeah,
it is so fresh. Like, I love it.
It's stunning. I just love it so much.
It doesn't feel like, you know, yeah, obviously it feels a bit dated in terms of, like, stuff, but it's a bit vague. But, you know, like, it feels a bit dated in the way it's made.
Yeah. In terms of the, like, a specific action pieces, it feels a little bit dated, but not in a bad way.
Yeah.
Maybe some of the hand to hand feels a bit, you know.
But again, it does.
One on one kind of feels a bit like. Mm. But
again, you've got to.
That doesn't take away from the film.
No, because you've got to think about it. He's not a fighter. Yeah, he's an archaeologist.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
He's like, not slick.
If it was made now, and I don't mean now as in the new one, I mean now as in like.
If they reboot. Someone new. Yeah.
Of, it would be like so slick and everything.
That would not
and
be
it would
fun.
Just take away from the joy of the plot and the person, you know? So I just don't think it would suit him to be slick. But yeah, it's so much fun. And it's just, I love him and Marion together. I always wanted to be Marion, not just because she ends up with Indy, but she was so cool.
She was.
Especially at the start when she drinks the guy under the table.
Oh my gosh, that is
and
so
And then
good.
She's holding the, so I always used to think that she's holding two shot glasses to her head,
but
it's actually ice. Because she's obviously getting a migraine from drinking
a headache,
so much.
Yeah.
And then she's got a thing, and she turns around, and then Indy's shadow is on the wall, and she just goes, like, she throws them like that. I'm just like, love that whole sequence so much.
She's so good.
And she's just so awesome. And I just,
I think out of all the female
companions,
she is the best.
She is the best.
She is the best. But, okay, so this is the thing. I didn't know this, but apparently Raiders of the Lost Ark was the highest grossing film of the year.
Yeah.
And it is, and you can tell.
Yeah.
You know, although Superman came out.
We need to talk more about that when we talk about Dial of Destiny. Mm. Because there's some comparisons that we need to make in terms of budget and in box office. Okay.
Got it.
That's very important. We need to make that distinction later.
Okay.
So let's not forget
about
that.
So we'll
put a little pin
Destiny.
In that. Yeah.
Pin. Okay.
Yeah.
So the next one is Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
And I found this very funny. So I had seen Temple of Doom. So I have seen Raiders of the Lost Ark a few times.
Yeah.
Temple of Doom,
Don't even ask me how many times I've seen Raiders.
Yeah,
more
you've
than
seen
a few
it
times.
Heaps. But I had seen Temple of Doom, I think, maybe once because of the horribly traumatic scene with the snake.
I've seen it a few. That I've probably seen a few times.
Yeah.
But,
so
yeah.
Again, for me, the issue is the snake. I like Indiana Jones. I do not like snakes. He at least can like deal with them. Like he hates them, but he will deal with them because he has to.
Yeah.
I don't. I will not look at it. I do not want to deal with it. No. And yes, I live in Australia. So that's one reason why as a kid, I remember in summer, because when it, you know, not when it had come out, obviously, because I was still quite young, but in summertime, we would go to our grandparents' house. So anyway, we would all go to our grandparents' house and they would get us like VHS tapes to watch of movies. And I remember Indiana Jones was one of them. And I remember watching Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then we were going to watch Temple of Doom. All the everyone sitting and watching Temple of Doom, and of course the famous dining room scene comes in, and I freak out and I run out of the room, and I never watched it after that until I was an adult, because I refused. I was like, I am not watching
movie.
That's
so funny.
Anyway, so Temple of Doom is a bit different.
Yeah. And look, we've had, I think if you know this series, you know the controversy that would have surrounded Temple of Doom at the time for its depiction of, you know, Indian culture and identity and things like that. And considering we are, I don't feel like I've ever been offended by this movie, like how some people have. But like, I understand why back then it would have been banned in the country.
Yeah.
And like some of it is a bit cringe, but like looking back on it now, I'm like, and then, you know, hearing like actors' opinions on it, like the one who plays the villain in the film is a very big Indian actor at the time. And since then,
he's like a big Indian actor. Yeah.
He passed away a few years ago. But he was also saying, like, you know, he felt the controversy was a bit silly as well, because this tribe is basically like depictions of, you know, things that used to happen much, much.
It's like a very extreme Hindu cult.
That would happen, like, you know, centuries ago. It was something about like how, you know, we ourselves in Indian films often do things that make fun of our own culture, but like if someone from the outside does the same thing, it's like all, you know, throwing hands and you know. So it's very like we never know what the middle ground is, and like that's why he felt it was a bit straight, like silly that there was such controversy around it.
I think,
which I totally understand.
Concept, it was an interesting film because it is very different. It's not, you know, you are out of the European subcontinent, out of the European continent. You're in the Indian subcontinent.
Yeah.
So as it is, it's a completely alien climate. And you know, he's obviously never been to a place like this or whatever, but I do like the start of it, which is in China.
In Shanghai,
And we get introduced.
Who do we meet?
Oh, we meet the young, very, very cute Ki Hee Kwon, who is adorable in this.
Dr. Jones!
He is so cute! He is so cute!
Oh my god!
And of course, we also meet the female lead, Willy.
Yeah.
And
played by Katie Capshaw, who eventually married Steven Spielberg. I think that's why I tend to enjoy the film, because I love the behind the scenes of what was happening.
Well, I think even Steven Spielberg was like, it's not his favorite film.
Yeah.
And he was like, I was meant to make this movie because I had to meet her.
Yeah.
but I was reading somewhere that apparently, because it's pretty dark.
Yeah.
This movie. And like as a kid to watch this, it is a very creepy film.
It's really scary.
It's very scary. It's very creepy, right? Yeah. Especially like towards the end where it's like all the rituals and like, weird the caves stuff going and all
that,
yeah. Yeah, and like all the little slave children.
Oh my gosh. In the mines. It's actually the worst. Yeah. Like, it's so, like, for so many people, it's their favorite one.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who love it.
So
it's like,
there's so many people who love it, and like, and they'll always be like, we don't feel great about the subject matter, but like, it's a lot of fun. And
Quentin Tarantino said it was his favorite. Yeah,
and there's just like, there's so much going on in this film. And
there
like,
is a lot happening.
And like, if you like restructure the commentary around it, it's like you can talk about how like, what's happening is so awful, and like we should acknowledge what's happening in this film. Like we shouldn't just like shut it off and like, you know. Yeah. Be like, oh no, no one watched this movie.
It's basically child slavery. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I think it is like we should talk about what's happening. In So,
Well, I was reading. So the tone of the film was very dark because, you know, George Lucas was writing it and he was going through a divorce at the time. Well, you know, all of that stuff. So it kind of like seeped into.
Funny how he's going through a divorce and Stephen was already divorced much prior and he's meeting Katie.
Yeah, so it's like, interesting. So, like, you know, personal life and like how that's. Yeah. But the other thing I was reading was there's another Indian actor, Roshan Seth, who was also in this film.
Yeah.
And he talked about the dinner scene where they're sitting and eating, you know, monkey brains and snakes and all that stuff. And he was like, it's so like the humor in the scene actually did not get. It went over people's heads because the scene and the thing is, once I read that, I was like, that makes sense. Because the whole idea is that it's these white people who've come to this Maharaja's house. Do you honestly think a Maharaja with people who speak like this are not going to have, you know, are going to be eating like this?
Yeah.
So it's basically just to make fun of these Goras, these white people.
These white people.
That, you know, look how primitive we are. This is the kind of food we eat. When it's just literally just making fun of them by you know, leaning heavily into the stereotypes.
Yeah.
So,
did kind of backfire on that.
Yes, yes, it did.
But I mean, I think we're all so much smarter now, and we can see what they were trying to say.
I will say the film is not my favorite.
No, it's not great. I think in terms of pacing, it's just it's very slow.
Yeah.
And it's weird because it's almost the same length as Raiders. Mm. I think it's only a few minutes.
But there's a lot of stuff that could have been faster.
Yeah, could have been faster. We didn't necessarily need. In saying that, it's a hell of a lot better than Dial of Destiny.
Well, one of the things that I thought was fascinating, it has Amrish Puri, who was the villain
we were talking about, yeah.
Who we were talking about earlier. And he is my absolute favorite villain.
Yeah,
because if you know anything about Bollywood, Amrish Puri is the quintessential villain.
Yes.
Right? Later years, he started to come as more like, you know, strict dads and stuff like that.
Yeah.
If you have seen Dilwale Dulhania Le Jayenge, or DDLJ for short, he is the scariest dad ever.
You can hear about DDLJ in the 20th episode of our podcast, which is the Bollywood
episode.
It.
Yes, we have talked about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I really love the fact that Steven Spielberg talked about him, and he said he is one of the best villains of all time. And he initially didn't want to do the film. He was like, no, I don't want to do it. Richard Attenborough is the one that talked him into it. Because he was in a movie that he was in Gandhi, which Richard Attenborough had directed. And he was like, no, I think you should consider this. You should do it. So I'm really glad that he did, because I'm like, yes, we've got Amrish Puri in an Indiana Jones film. Like,
no, it's so
and he's
great.
A terrifying
and
villain.
That's what really makes Temple of Doom special, because it is someone who we have like literally grown up watching, and he's in it, and you're like, man, that's awesome.
There's a Hindi movie called Mr. India. It's such an amazing movie. It's very sad and very sweet. He's the villain in that as well, and his name is Mugambo. And there's a bit in there where he boils people in pits of acid, which is very similar to the one here.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, I wonder whether that got inspired by it or not.
I fully believe that Steven Spielberg has seen Mr. India.
But like, I don't know if Mr. India came out before
this. Probably after.
I think Mr. India came out after this. Yeah. So Mr. India got...
Maybe they got inspired by
the director of Mr. India is Shekhar Kapoor. I think he's the one that made Elizabeth with... Yeah. Kate Blanchett, so you know, some big names there. Anyway, I think let's move on to the last one. Well, the last of the original trilogy, which is The Last Crusade, which is my favorite.
Which is your favorite,
and I'll talk about why
later. 1989.
So I would have been 4 years old.
Yeah, and just putting it in there that in 1988, Working Girl had come out.
Oh my god!
And it was the comedy of the year.
I love Working Girls.
It's so good. So two really great years for Harrison. Yes. Like back to back.
The Last Crusade is about essentially the story of the Holy Grail. In a cup. In a nutshell.
In a nutshell.
So it's the story of the Holy Grail, and you know, and also we get introduced to Indy's dad, who is played by Sean Connery. I don't know why I'm doing that stupid accent, but Sean Connery. And he is Henry Jones Sr. And he goes missing. So Indy gets sucked in, and now he has to go looking for his dad. And surprise, surprise, who are the villains?
The Nazis!
Again!
Nazis.
So we're back to the Nazis. Let's be honest, they're fun villains. And I mean, it's Steven Spielberg,
and you know, this is all pre-war, isn't it? Because I think Last Crusade is like 1938.
Yeah, so it would have been just before the war. The war started. So So anyway, so Last Crusade. I love this film. This is my favorite.
Yeah,
The Last Crusade is my favorite. What do you think about it?
I mean, I love it too. Like, I think it's a great little ending, the first initial ending, I guess. It's emotional, it's really fun to see a new dynamic for him with his dad, because we get the flashback at the start with young Indy, played by River Phoenix.
The start is really nice,
really like kind of tells you everything you need to know about the way that they are as a family. You know, he gets his love for this from his dad, And while they do have like a bit of a contentious relationship, I think they really do care about each other and they care about this thing that they do too. And they, you know, are willing to do whatever it takes to save the artifact that needs to be saved. And in this case, it's the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really interesting to see him with his dad.
This is interesting.
Yeah.
So initially, the story behind the Last Crusade, now obviously the title probably would have been a bit different, but initially George Lucas suggested that they should do like a haunted mansion storyline.
So glad he didn't listen to that.
I'm just like, thank you. That is wonderful. But like, because they kind of wanted it to do something similar to Poltergeist, and I'm just like, why? Why would you do that? So I'm glad that they didn't, because it was like, the highest grossing film of 1989. Like, why would you do that?
It was George High. I feel like he was.
Maybe he was. Maybe he was. But also what I found interesting was that, this is the thing, whenever I read about like Steven Spielberg's reactions to like certain things in the film and how like he was, his thought processes while he was filming them, I almost feel as if he was a bit reluctant throughout the whole process, apart from the first one.
Yeah.
You know? Like, one of the things he mentioned was, I think it was in an article I read somewhere. Now, again, I read it in an article. I hope it's correct. That he had to give up directing Big. And I think Hanks. Rain Man as well, because he was committed to this.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think so. So that's kind of big ones to not be able to...
Is that the one with Tom Hanks?
I think Big is the one with Tom Hanks, and Rain Man is the one with Hoffman and Tom Cruise.
Yeah,
so, you know, like, that's pretty big stuff to give up, you know?
Those are pretty big movies, too.
Yeah, but again, like, this was the highest grossing film of that year. So again, I think not a big loss.
Yeah.
But I feel... I just have this weird, like, image in my head of like Steven Spielberg like going, I don't want to do this. George Lucas going, you have to.
I don't necessarily think that's true, because if you watch the Spielberg documentary, which is great, everyone should go watch it. His hesitance was always more because it would always get bigger and bigger, right? Like the second one was bigger than the first.
Yeah.
The third was bigger than both of them. And it is kind of one of the only, before Jurassic Park, it was his first time kind of
doing something so big.
Big things and doing them as a trilogy, right? So as someone who has already made his mark, but still has not gone down the road of like making a trilogy, which is a long, and you're wrapping up, at the time, you're wrapping up a story.
Yeah.
You want it to end in a certain way.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things going on. So I can imagine his hesitance came from it being like, how do we make this as good as it possibly can be?
He probably was a bit nervous
about it. He says really that he always gets, even till now, like I remember watching, it was just before the Fablemans, I think.
Yeah.
And he was like, I still, till this day, on day one, I get nervous.
Can you imagine Steven Spielberg nervous?
And I'm just like, Steven Spielberg nervous? Well,
but see, that's the thing. You've got to be nervous. Yeah,
because the day that you're not nervous is the day you stop doing it, you know? Like, that's a saying that, that goes around. You will, the day you get used to it, just quit, you know? Because it's never going to be the same thing. Because every day is a challenge on a set. Every single day. And every day is different. So that's the only reason I can imagine him having any kind of hesitancy. Not because he doesn't want to do it or anything.
Yeah.
But because it's like, how do we bring this home, basically?
Again, obviously, now this is where we segue into the new films. But like, by wrapping up, you know, talking about the original trilogy. And this is the thing. I feel like the way that they wrapped up Last Crusade... it's so perfect.
It's so perfect.
You know, them riding off into the sunset, and
that was the, for all intents and purposes, that was the ending.
That is such a good ending.
There was never a thought that there was going to be a fourth one.
Because the thing about these films is, and I guess this should be more in the conclusion, But I will say it here and then revisit it. But the thing about these films is they are purely adventure films.
Yeah.
I don't think, as much as, you know, I'm a romance girly.
Yeah.
I love a good romance in a film. But I also love my action. In fact, I prefer action films and I prefer adventure films than romances. The Mummy does it perfectly. They integrate the romance and the adventure. But from day one, Indiana Jones has not done that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he sleeps around and stuff like that. But that's kind of like who he is.
Yeah.
It's not like this big romantic thing, you know? And
yeah.
Half the time, you don't even remember that there's a girl there if she's not actively part of it. Let's be honest, yeah. Marion was the only one who was actively part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? In the first one. So, in that sense, we didn't need that, what happened in the last two films.
Yeah.
And I think this is where it's a good idea to come in and talk about the last two films. But I also
know why it happened, because Stephen really did love the idea of Indy and Marion
like together, he loved
them, and when we talk about Dial of Destiny, we'll talk about it more.
Yeah,
On them specifically, because something it has come to light recently.
Oh, okay.
About why he didn't direct the last one.
Okay. All right. So this is a good one to talk about with the fourth film, which is Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. So these are the two new films.
Yeah.
So Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. What year did that come out?
2008.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 2008, and then this is 2023. So like long, like breaks between these two.
This was the longest.
Yeah. Okay. So what is the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull all about?
God, I don't know.
You don't know?
It's just so bad. There's
a crystal skull.
There's a crystal skull. basically, we pick up in 1953, I want to say. And, you know, again, Indy's going about his adventures, has this whole time, and he gets, I think he gets, you know, picked up by the Russians. Yes. And he has to determine whether, they've kidnapped his friend, and it's so convoluted. I'm sorry.
It's
but like
not a good movie.
Basically, his friend has been kidnapped. He was the one who was trying to find these skulls that have some link to Mayan. Is it Mayan?
Yeah.
I don't want to speak wrong. It's Mayan, right?
I think.
Oh. God. Anyway, if it's wrong, please do correct us, because this movie is so convoluted, guys. That have a connection to Mayan mythology. Like, that their source of knowledge or, you know, anything that they have learned has come from another source. You know, that
otherworldly.
Otherworldly source, basically. And along the way, he meets Mutt Williams, who turns out to be
his baby.
His son from Marion. And there's a reunion at the end, which is the only good thing about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Basically. And there's just a lot going on with the Russians. And I'm just like, I didn't even concentrate on half of it back then, or even now when we were rewatching it. I was just like, this movie is so bad.
I think the biggest issue with this movie, and look, to be very honest, yes, it's insane. And, like, there's some bits in it that are, like, the sword fighting bit is so funny. Oh,
my God, I forgot about it. I literally have blocked that out of my brain. I would
be okay with all of that if they fixed one thing, and that one thing was the pacing. It was boring.
It was so boring.
Like, we were literally sitting and watching and going,
there's I'm bored.
Large chunks of this film where I'm just sitting there and I'm bored.
Which is weird, because, again, it's, like, 2 hours.
Yeah, same time.
Yeah.
It felt long. It felt really long. I just felt like the pacing was just all over the place. Bad. Some bits were just, it was not good. And look, the thing is, there were some bits in this that I did like. Right?
I like the start.
I also like the bit, I like the fact that, you know, having just what I said, you know, the romance thing doesn't marry up. Because initially they hadn't really set it up that way.
Yeah.
So I was okay. If they had ridden off into the sunset and we never saw Indiana Jones ever again,
yeah,
I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, right? I think most people were fine with
exactly.
that.
Exactly. However, now that we have been brought back, yeah, we are introduced to his son, who happens to be Marion's son as well. I am back on board.
Exactly. Right? Same, because it's Marion and I always wanted to be her. So
yeah. I do like that. I love the fact that we get a conclusion to their romance.
Yeah.
Right? And not just a conclusion. They get married. They have a son. He has a family.
Yeah.
Bang, boom, done. Right?
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. I love, you know, him as a character. I really enjoyed him, watching him again as an older person, yeah, as Indiana Jones. How old would he have been at this point?
At the time?
He would have been in his 60s? Late 60s?
Late 60s. Yeah. Because he's 81 now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, I mean, for that age to be doing that stuff, it's like, great.
Yeah.
Now, what I didn't like was a lot.
Most of it.
You tell me what you didn't like first, and I'll go.
The whole thing, apart from them as, like, characters. Because I just... What? Why did it have to be aliens?
Exactly.
Why? Why did it have to be aliens? Like, I just don't get it. I really don't get how there's a connection.
We can't have run out of things.
With Mayan mythology, I hope. Please do correct us if that's not right. Mm. And aliens. Where is the connection?
My thing is,
what happened?
This is the thing. Okay, so this is the thing. This is what I don't like. And this is a very deep conversation. And this is why I hate... I do not like conspiracy theories about, you know, like, oh, the aliens built the pyramids and, like, all of that
it's
stuff.
It's so dumb.
I don't believe that. As a person who is a historian, as someone who has studied these time periods, I do not believe that.
People built them. People.
I don't understand why it is so hard. And look, this is a movie. So fine, whatever. You can imagine whatever you want, right? I do not. But these are the things that perpetuate these ideas, right?
Yeah.
I do not like the idea that we as humans have received our knowledge from an alien being. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I just think that whatever we have done so far in the thousands of years that humans have existed, that one little piece, oh, the aliens came and gave all this technology, nullifies every single thing that a human being has ever done on this earth.
Technology and the knowledge to use it.
Like, exactly.
What?
You know, history is ebbs and flows. It's ups and downs. So we gain knowledge, we lose it. We gain it, we lose it. Just because there's certain things that, you know, were built at a certain time and we can't figure out what technology they used doesn't mean that it wasn't those humans who did it. Perhaps that technology was lost through wars and not being able to record it properly, or, you know, it was buried and maybe 1,000 years from now we'll find it.
The way we compartmentalize things in our head, history does that to itself. You know, yeah, like it takes back and goes forward, and, you know, it's meant to, like,
history
lose and gain.
Is not, like, static, and this is the thing. Like, even though it happened in the past, it is, according to whatever, and this is why we keep looking for more information, because things change.
Yeah.
Interpretations change. So it's like, if you're giving us aliens, I feel like that's such a simplistic...
Like, the amount of times we've been at, like, I don't know, a museum or, you know, an art gallery or whatever, and, like, it'll say on the plaque or whatever, it'll say, like, so-and-so had, like, this knowledge or had this piece of information or had this tool or book or whatever, and it got lost and blah, 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 and then it got rediscovered by someone else and, like, all this stuff. And, like, you know, they had this technique that they used for this many years, but because of some war, it was taken away or, like, you know, whatever. Like, you know,
I always think of, I think it's the Colosseum. I can't remember which building it is in Rome. But they did analysis on how it was built, right? And they recreated the kind of concrete that the Romans would have used. That concrete is very expensive to produce now, right? But it is stronger than the concrete that we have today, right?
Yeah.
Or most likely would be stronger if we produced it with today's technology, right?
Yeah.
This is thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
Which is why if you look at those buildings, through earthquakes and floods and wars and bombings, they're still standing. It's just some. It's a very simplistic thing that I've just said, but you know, there's obviously lots more to it.
Yeah.
But there is technology that humans have developed and lost, which is fine because it happens.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was the aliens who brought it. So like, all of the wonderful achievements that we've had have never happened.
Did the aliens give knowledge to, like, you know, Aristotle and, you know, all these other people? And
I just feel...
You know, the people who originated mathematics and therefore, you know, astrologers who have looked at space. And how did we go to space? Was it because of the aliens? No, it was because of human intelligence.
Don't you know they left a ship for us? Oh. That's what they took up to the moon. No, I shouldn't say that because that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But, you know what I mean? Like, so I feel like the whole aliens gave it... It's such a lazy thing to put into a film. This whole thing is so lazy. And this is why I don't like Crystal Skull.
It's so bad. I mean, that is one reason I don't like it. I don't like it because it's just boring. Mm. And there's nothing like it. Like, the action is not even interesting. I'm like, what? Like, no. No. Like, the pacing is awful. And that's really not saying much because even Dial of Destiny was just... And we'll talk about it in a second. That was even worse. Like, just the dialogue wasn't smart. Like, nope. I was just like, oh, because the start of it actually really good with the whole, like, I really love that opening scene.
In which one?
In Crystal Skull.
Oh, yeah.
Where the cars are racing each other.
Yes.
And the amount of amazing camera angles in that, I was like, oh, cool. My God, so it's good. Where he can so see good. It in the,
yep.
Right in them at the back, and then it goes into the mirror, and then it goes at the front. Oh my God, it's so good.
So cool.
And then like about like halfway through, it just became like so uninteresting, even in the camera angles. I was like, who was directing this film now? Certainly not Steven Spielberg.
It honestly felt like Steven Spielberg had checked out. I love him. I mean, we love him,
but that movie really does feel like... It was just, there was just too much coming at him from so many people with, like, you know, George Lucas and Kathleen Kennedy and, like, Lucasfilm and everything. And just, like, all at the same time. And, yeah, like, this really shouldn't. And I remember when Crystal Skull came out, it was either, like, an interview or, like, behind the scenes or something. And him being, like, I was hesitant to make this movie because, you know... For all intents, like he said, it had ended with them riding off into the sunset.
Yeah.
And then George was like, but what if we followed them down the sunset? And I'm just like, George Lucas, why are you ruining our childhood? Like, why? Just stick to Star Wars, man. Geez. Just stick to it. And this is what happened with the prequel trilogy, which, you know, everyone is always like, that's a whole other episode. But anyway.
But okay, so. And this is where we come to the Dial of Destiny, because it should have ended there. And the thing is, it should have ended at Crystal Skull.
Yeah, look, I didn't like Crystal Skull, but that, again, was another ending.
It wraps up Indy's story really well. It wraps up
totally fine. He and Marion get back together.
Yeah.
They get married. They have Mutt Williams, who is technically Henry Jones Jr. Henry Jones III.
I do like the bit where he's at first he's like, oh yeah, college, blah blah blah, blah. And then he finds out and he goes, why did you let him?
Why did you?
It's
like, you're gonna go back to college.
It's so funny. It's like, it doesn't take him long to become dad.
Nah, he literally became dad instantly, and I loved that. I thought that was so really nice. And then Dial of Destiny happened.
Okay, so Dial of Destiny is the latest one. It is opening up with Indiana Jones. He is retiring. Mm-hmm. He's at a crossroads in life where he is... It's very sad because he's lost his son. Mutt has died because he... Obviously, the Vietnam War. And obviously, the grief has torn apart Marion and... Indy, and so they are separating.
They are separated.
And he's also retiring. So he's really not in a great position, and we can tell because he's quite depressed. And then he meets Helena, who is his goddaughter.
Who hasn't seen in a while.
Who he has not seen since she was, I think, 14 or something. Yeah. And he goes on an adventure with Helena because they are looking for the Dial of Archimedes' Dial of Destiny.
Which got, which they picked up in the flashback that opens the film.
Yes.
Which is during, I want to say it's during World War II.
Yeah, because okay. Who are the villains this time?
The Nazis! We're never going to get away from the Nazis, guys. Oh
my god, that's funny.
Yeah, so we get a de-aged Harrison Ford,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, we'll get into the technicals later. Of the whole de-aging and everything else. But basically, the story that is set within 1969 predominantly.
Yeah.
And like we said, he's with Helena, who is his goddaughter, and they have to... Basically, it's a tug of war of the Dial of Destiny between yes. the Nazis. The main one being Dr. Schmidt, played by Mads Mikkelsen. Oh my god, he's so awesome.
So anyway, okay, so the concept of the film, very exciting. Because
oh, yeah.
I did, okay, so the Dial of Destiny actually does exist.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so this is a dial that Archimedes created, and it is called the, I have to say this properly, Antikythera.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It is called the Antikythera mechanism. So I'm going to read a little bit from the Smithsonian Magazine, which is written about it.
Yeah.
And it says that... more than a millennium before the 13th century, Europeans invented the first mechanical clocks. The Antikythera mechanism employed similarly complex technology, including gear, wheels, dials, and pointers to chart the cosmos, so the skies.
Yeah.
The ancients used it to predict eclipses, track the movement of the sun and the moon, and even see when sporting events like the Olympics were scheduled to make place. So in Indiana Jones, it says that you can go back in time. That's not how they used it. They used it as, like, you can almost sort of look at, like, you know, what would be the auspicious times according to the stars.
Yeah.
So essentially the dial helps you to chart the stars, right? It is a very simplistic, obviously, thing for it. It's a very interesting concept. But again, they bring in this whole idea of time travel.
Mm-hmm.
So we had aliens... in the last one, and now we have time travel.
Can I just say I can deal with time travel, but I can't deal with the aliens.
True, I get that. Yeah. I do get that. However, this didn't make this film good.
It was stupid. Good, yeah, it was right? dumb.
What would you say was the really, really bad? So what was the ugly in this?
Was the ugly? The length of the film.
Oh my god.
It 2.5 hours?
That was too long.
The most this movie has ever been is 2 hours.
2.5 hours was too long.
And therefore, 2.5 hours was a lot of air. It was a lot of scenes that did not need to be there. Like, even at all.
Yeah.
Like, specifically with the kid that's along the way.
Yeah.
And, a few other little bits and everything that just... If you took them out...
It would not change the story.
It would not change the story. So I don't know why they were there.
Yeah.
Nor did they add any comedic value.
Yeah.
There were about 3 chase scenes.
Yeah.
Right at the start of the film.
I know. Before the halfway point, there were 3 chase scenes.
Before the halfway point. Not even before the halfway point. Like, before, like, the hour. Before even, like, maybe... 40 minutes in, I feel like it was like 45 minutes in, and there were like 3 chase scenes. Them trying to get the dial from the Nazis could have been done some other way. Like,
it didn't absolutely. Have to
be a chase through Morocco.
It did, like, not it have to not be. Have I think that was such a lazy filmmaking move. Like,
It was just so dumb. Like,
oh, let's just throw in a car chase.
We've had 2 already. Let's just do another one. I'm fine with the very start because it's in the flashback.
I like the start, in fact.
I love that it's on the train. Yeah. It's so good. I did enjoy parts of the parade. Like, them riding through the parade on the horse was kind of epic, but then it went to the subway and it just got ridiculous.
That was just ridiculous.
I was like, this is stupid. I feel like the humor was just really stagnant.
There was no humor.
Any, lines that were memorable. No. It was not a memorable script.
No.
At all.
I don't remember anything that was said in the film that where was I'm just like, oh, that's.
Or just like any like comedic bits. Mm. Like, you know how Raiders has the whole, you know, the guy with the knife.
It's so funny.
And Indy just shoots him. He's just like, dude, what?
That was good.
Like, that's so funny. There's nothing like that in this movie. Where it's just like, you know, I guess they tried to do the same thing where he, like, does the whole whip thing. Mm. And then they all bring their guns out, which was almost, like, if it had held a beat longer, it would have been like, okay, that's actually quite hilarious.
Mm.
But it just, we got out of it too quick. The pacing was just all over the place. The editing was so shoddy. Oh, my God.
Yeah, talk about the editing a bit, because you mentioned that in the theater and I didn't pick it.
Well, it's in the whole length of the film, or the pacing of the film. Mm. That is editing, right? Like, half of, like, it could have easily been condensed down to, like, 2 hours. We could have cut off an hour out of it. And even just, like, transitions between scenes was just, like, really... We didn't stay in places that we needed to stay in long enough.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? Like, there was just, like, bits where I was like, oh, let's go off to the next thing. And I'm just like, I know we're on the race against the Nazis. I know. But, like, a beat longer would put so much emphasis on, like, you know, on what you're trying to say here.
Mm.
And, like, had they cut off half of the pointless chase scenes, it wouldn't have mattered if we stayed in that scene a little bit longer, because we've already cut off that time, right? Mm. So transitions were just awful. I think the use of the maps, which are so iconic in these films, was... Mm. I barely even noticed the maps because the maps were going so fast.
Yeah, the map was going so fast. I was like, where are we going? Like, I didn't even see half the places that you're crossing.
See, like, where the dot's going, because it used to be like... It would go, like, the dot lands here, and then it goes here, and then... And that would always happen with the Indiana Jones theme.
Mm, and they didn't have that.
And they barely used the theme.
The whole film. They barely used the theme.
The whole, dun-dun-dun-dun would start. Yeah. And then
they would just change. And they would just
change to another thing. Like, I don't think we ever heard the theme completely ever.
Agreed. Mm.
Like, I was just like, what is happening?
Yeah. I think, okay, so a couple of things that I did like about this. I liked Phoebe Waller-Bridge. I thought she was good.
I thought she did a good job.
She did a fairly good job with what she was given.
Yeah.
I don't think she's done any big action stuff before, so I think she did an amazing job with that. Because there are bits that are quite challenging physically, and I'm sure she's, you know, had a fun time doing those.
Yeah.
But I just liked her character. I did like Helena. And this is why I feel bad that this wasn't great, because I think she would have been a great character to have. Yeah. I don't necessarily love the fact that his son dies. I can see why they did it, because of the whole Shia LaBeouf stuff.
Was not going to end up coming back for this anyway.
Yeah. So I get why they didn't do it.
Yeah.
But I think they didn't have to kill him.
Yeah.
Perhaps, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's better ways of doing it. I liked that we got Sulla.
Oh, seeing Sulla was great. Yeah,
that was good. Even though it was for a short bit, but I think that was good. Yeah. We do see Marion at the end. They do end up back together. So once, you know, they come back. The thing that really pissed me off about this whole thing, about this movie, is it's fine if you're talking about time travel, right? And so the whole plot is that the Mads Mikkelsen, he's like, he's going to go back in time at a certain point into the battle in Berlin.
Yeah.
And he's going to do whatever he needs to do so the Nazis can win the war.
Yeah.
And if that means that he's going to kill Hitler himself, he's okay with doing that.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of interesting, right? However, it doesn't work out, right? And they end up in Sicily in 200 and something BC.
Yeah.
During the Battle of Sicily with the Sicilians and the ancient Romans. And there's planes flying everywhere, and the Romans are calling them dragons, which was hilarious, which was actually. Kind of that was kind of funny.
I was like, it's kind of funny.
And it's just so, oh my God. And they meet Archimedes, and like...
And
becomes they talk like melodrama in Greek, at the end. And it's just like, oh, geez, seriously? Come on, man. And then, you know, Indy wants to stay back.
Because he's been shot.
He's been shot, and he's like, what have I got to live for? And, you know, my son is dead, my wife has left me, blah, 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 blah. I'm just going to stay here.
Yeah.
I'm just like, come on, man. Really? We had to do this?
And, like, you know, I had to, like, help Archimedes with the dial, like, because he's building it at the time. And, oh, my God, he has a full dial. Like, what?
Like, come on. Come on. Wouldn't it have been so much better if the dial had just not worked?
Oh, yeah.
I think it would have been so much better. Like, I don't know, maybe. Like,
it's not meant to, you know?
Yeah. Or, you know, it's in the wrong hands or something, you know, or it works, but you don't take that step of going back.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of pull back. And it's like, I feel like that would have been so much more powerful. There's other ways of doing it. Like, you know, I think they find Archimedes' tomb and he's wearing a watch. I liked that. So it's kind of like, oh, so it actually worked. You could have done something like that.
Yeah.
Why did you actually have to go in the past? I think that was dumb.
Yeah, that was really stupid.
And I'm just like, oh, jeez, this is so stupid.
So ridiculous.
So dumb. Anyway, so can we talk about...
Can we talk about the DAD?
Yeah, what you were going to say, yeah.
Okay, so looks-wise, not too bad, right?
But it was inconsistent.
Yeah. There were a lot of bits where I was like, that's not fully done.
No, it wasn't. He's still looking old.
But the voice...
Yes.
You cannot do de-aging and then not also do something about
with the voice. With the voice,
Because when he talked, it was like 80-year-old Harrison Ford.
Yeah. And I think this is like, where you can use AI.
Exactly.
Right? This is where you should be using AI.
I'm not ever going to, you know, promote AI ever. But if we got to use it for something like this, then we have to. If you really want to make it convincing that this is supposed to be younger Indy, then you just have to go the whole route. You just have to do both things. You have to do the image and the voice. Because it coming out with like 80-year-old Harrison Ford was really jarring. It was
very weird.
I was just like, what? Because I looked and I was like, oh, okay, not too bad. It's you know, not too bad.
It's actually pretty decent.
And then he talked and I was like, wait, what? Old. And then there was someone, and then there was inconsistency with the de-aging as well. So we're just never going to get it right, I feel like. You know, I think we got it enough in the second Ant-Man with Michael Douglas. Pretty good.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Yeah, that was pretty decent.
The de-aging of this was not good.
It was not good. This is the big kicker.
Yeah.
I didn't know that Steven Spielberg had not directed this.
I told you, but you forgot.
I forgot. And as I'm watching it, I literally am watching... Because see, the thing is, even though, like, you know, there have been movies that he's made that are not great, there is an essence to Steven Spielberg and the way he makes films, you know? The way his camera angles line up, his shots, his... I think it's just, you know, the way he looks at anything that he's doing is different. Yeah. There is a feel to it, right? And I'm watching this and I'm going, it doesn't feel like him.
So basically, recently, Karen Allen, who plays Marion, she did an interview with The Hollywood Reporter, like, just talking about legacy of Indiana Jones and all that stuff. And she said that, you know, Steven, like, I think everybody knew that Steven might have initially was trying, attempting to do it. And she said his story was going to focus a lot more on Indy and Marion, right? Of course, like, that would have been, like, one of the plots, because then the Dial of Destiny would have been,
plot B,
you know, would have been the action.
Yeah.
And I don't remember fully what it was, but she was saying, like, you know, that's what he wanted to focus on, but then, like, because, I think it was, like, Kathleen Kennedy, who was head of Lucasfilm, was like, that's not the direction that it should go. And then, like, there was already another script that was being worked on with, like, James Mangold and, like, all these other people.
Yeah.
And, like, because it was, like, there's, like, four writers on the film. I'm just like, why is this? Because there was just, like, 1,000 edits, I guess. And therefore, Steven let it go. And James took the place of Steven as director.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, he's done Logan previously, right? Yeah. That was his other film that
which is a great film.
Knows him for.
It's like, such it's, a good
it's so
movie.
Good. It's so good. I get that feeling from it. I don't know why. Maybe I could be totally wrong about that. Like, but it just gives me that vibe, and I'm just like, okay, you know, like, I guess that's what we're doing. Mm. And it hasn't worked because I did not enjoy this movie. Like, I was so disappointed by the end. The ending is the only thing that makes it good for me because he wakes up. They've come back from the past. Stupid. And and he's injured and he's been bandaged up and everything. And Marion walks in and they reunite, you know. And it's the only thing that makes it for me because, you know, even Sulla comes in with his grandkids. And,
yeah.
And Helena's there. And it's just that reiteration of, like, he thinks he's alone, but he's actually
not. But he's not alone, yeah.
You know? You know, who have I got to live for, he says. But he does. He has all these people that care about him and would just be so upset if he was gone. And, you know, he's reunited, reconciled with Marion, which is great. But the rest of it is just... Oh, God. I mean, like, you have people like Mads Mikkelsen and Boyd Holbrook, who is a great actor. And you underuse them.
Right?
How do you underuse Mads as the villain? Like, I just feel like he became so...
He was so caricaturish.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And, like, he could have done something so great because it's Mads Mikkelsen.
This is Mads Mikkelsen, seriously?
I was like, oh my God. When they cast him, I was like, yes, this is kind of great because it could go... In a totally, like, like he's Hannibal Lecter in Hannibal. So, like, come on.
This is the thing. Like, Mads Mikkelsen, he always comes off as, like, this really serious actor.
Yeah.
But he likes to have fun, clearly. Because he's been in Marvel and he's been in, like, all of these other things.
Exactly.
And now he's doing Indiana Jones. He's clearly likes these things, right? And you didn't use him well.
Don't even... Okay, so that was one thing that pissed me off. How dare you... Underused Boyd Holbrook. Sorry, the guy who plays the Corinthian in The Sandman barely got any dialogue in this film. Like, when did he speak? Where were the words? Why was he such a, like, wordless character?
I know, he was, like, barely talking.
I was like, what? Like, there is so much charisma in that man. Like, if you watch, for anybody who's watched The Sandman... Oh my gosh.
Wasn't he also in...
He was in Narcos as well with Pedro Pascal.
Yeah.
There is so much charisma in him as an actor. He's actually so good. Like, he needs to come up more. Like, more people need to acknowledge him. He's so good. And you just come... Like, when I found out he was going to be in this movie, I was like, oh, yes, so cool. And he is so underused. I was like, what?
I know, like, he's actually a really good actor. I've seen him in, like, a few things. And he's pretty decent,
it was so stupid. I was like, this is absolute rubbish. I hate this.
So I have to read something. Okay? Yeah. And this is from the review that Roger Ebert gave, right? Yeah. But anyway, so this is on Roger Ebert director, the website. But essentially, it's Brian Tallarico who's written this review. This is so funny. So he gave the movie 2.5 stars, which just breaks my heart. And it says, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny is somehow both never boring and never really entertaining. And it is such an apt description for this film. Like, because I'm not actively bored, right?
Yeah.
But I'm not entertained either. Do you know what I mean? This is not fun.
Sorry, there were parts where I was actually actively bored.
Yeah, and I was bored. Just
like, what's happening?
Yeah, but, you know, like the whole film, you're not like sitting there bored the whole film, right? But you're not entertained either.
Nah.
Right?
It's really, it's a good description.
It's a great description.
I just wanted to love it so bad. I wanted to be like, you know, because I've been seeing like all the time, I didn't read any reviews, but I saw like titles of reviews and I was like, oh damn. But I was like, I don't want any of that to affect my viewing of this. Yeah. I want to come out of this and be like, oh my God, I loved it. And sure enough, I didn't love it.
Did not love it. Anyway, so, I think it's a bit unfair that this was the ending of Indiana Jones. Like, this was a goodbye.
Can we just, like, what we put a pin in before? The budget of this film, when you look at this film, the length of this film, what happens in the film, you're like, oh my god, there's so much going on. The budget reflects that.
Yeah.
It was $250 to $3 million. And they have not even barely made a profit yet. It's about $172 at the moment.
That's not good.
Right? That's the box office. That's what it's sitting on right now.
That's bad.
In comparison, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Now, I didn't do any inflation. Forgot to do that. At the time, you know what? Go ahead and guess how much their budget was, Raiders of the Lost Ark. At the time, in 1981.
$50 million?
$20 million.
Shut up.
And it made $389 million.
So let's see, $20 million, 1981. I'm going to Google this, okay? So value of $20 million from 1981 to 2023. Converted amount base would be $66
million. They did that in such little money.
Wow.
And how much would their box office made? 389, I believe.
It would be $1.3 billion. Did you get that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we are nowhere near that right now. So, with that little budget, they made such an impact.
Yeah.
In that film. And this, with its flashy budget, $250 to $300 million, has only now made $172 million. So it really just goes to prove that you don't need such a massive budget for...
You need a good storyline.
You need a good story. Give us a good story, and the rest will come.
Yeah, you don't need a big budget. You need a good story, a good director, good actors. That's it.
Like, the amount of chases in that... Even the plane at the end,
So four chases.
Four chases, and then they go into the past. So that's going to cost them money too, because they have to dress people in period piece. And they already have, because it's 1969. Yeah, exactly. And then they've also got 1930 whatever happening in the past.
There's quite a few period pieces.
I'm just like, there are so much going on.
Speaking of you underusing characters, there's Antonio Banderas in this
film. Oh my gosh, yes. We didn't even talk about that. Because there's nothing worth talking about.
He dies like that.
I was like, you underused Antonio Banderas.
They did not even have a scene between him and Harrison Ford.
They're supposed to be old friends.
Like, what? Okay.
I'm like, okay.
You could have just been like, oh, this just randomly met.
Yeah.
It was just that. Like, it was just not good. Anyway, I think let's move into the conclusion bit. Yes, because it's depressing me.
It is depressing me.
So, let's talk about favorites first. So, your favorite is the first one.
Yes.
Quickly, why?
Because it's just so, like I said, it's crispy and just, like, tangible. Like, you could just, I don't know, because it's like, it gives me good feelings every time I watch it. Like, that is a movie that I watch when I'm sad or, like, you know, I've had a bad day or something. I'm like, oh, I really want to watch Raiders right now. And I'll watch it. You know, like, and it's just, there's so many elements that I love about it. Like, the action is good. The humor is great. Like I said, love Mary and I wanted to be her when I was a kid. I just thought she was the coolest person ever. Like, the camera angles, the film techniques.
So good.
Like, that is, like...
gold.
Oh, it's juicy. It's so good. It's
juicy and crispy.
It's juicy and crispy and just, like, it's so yummy. It's so good. It's just fun throughout, you know? It's the best. And even just, like, the exposition gets... told to us in such interesting ways, like, especially at the start when they're talking about what the Ark of the Covenant is.
I know.
It's the two guys from, what are they, like, FBI, CIA, something, whatever those guys are. And it's Marcus and Indy, and they're all sort of, like, talking about what it is, and then, like, when someone doesn't understand, they'll ask a question that someone else will answer, and then go in, like, and it's just, like, it's constantly
good writing,
moving. It's so good.
It is good.
Oh, it's amazing. I just love it.
Well, my favorite's the Last Crusade.
Yeah.
And that's because, I think mostly it's because of the subject matter.
Yeah.
You know, it's the Holy Grail. I love anything to do with the Holy Grail. That sort of thing. It's been shot in Venice and like all of that stuff. So I love that as a very superficial reason for liking it. But I really do. I don't know what it is. I loved the third one.
It's like Raiders is the movie that I'm like, oh man, I want to do that. That's what I want to do. Yeah. You know, like tell a story like that. That's so cool.
And I will say Raiders is my second favorite. I love Raiders as well. But yeah, I loved A Last Crusade. And the thing that I feel sad about with the latest one is not as bad in that sense. But the reason why I didn't like the second one as much is because I felt like it wasn't academic enough in the sense that he's an academic and there's like no academia happening there.
Yeah.
Apart from him like knowing stuff.
And that's why when we get back to that in Last Crusade, it's like, we feel like we're in a good spot again.
Yeah. I liked that. But anyway, so what do you think? Like legacy wise, do you think the final two films have messed things up? Does it make a difference? What do you think?
I mean, I can see why for some people it would and why it wouldn't for some people, because a lot of people are like, I just now only acknowledge the three, the first three, and I'm kind of in that boat too.
Yeah.
I feel like I am in that boat because that Last Crusade ending is just brilliant.
It's perfect.
Like, it's so perfectly done.
I'm willing to take Crystal Skull
in terms of Indy's personal story and the ending of the latest film, you know, I'm fine with that. But like, again, Dial of Destiny didn't need to happen. Crystal Skull, he's fine with Marion.
Yeah.
They have their kids. I'm fine imagining.
I think on a personal level, Crystal Skull is a good thing simply because it wraps up Indy and Marion. Dial of Destiny did not have to happen.
Like, it's now felt so unnecessary. And
I think it just, like, especially you've got your original collaborator.
Yeah.
Who's backed off.
Yeah.
Now it's purely
really assigned to do this, you know?
That is purely a studio decision then after that. And I understand
Harrison wanting to do it in terms of, like, he was like, it was interesting to me when that script came about exploring Indy at the end of his career, you know, like he's retired, he's not and he didn't say
the world,
like,
is changing around about him, the
family or anything, but like the world is changing, he's in a different place now.
That is personally an interesting place to explore. That is interesting.
And they could have done something way more compelling, way more compelling. And I really think if Steven had been the one to be there, we could have gotten a really, you know, touching Marion and Indy story.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is, look,
because that's what he wanted.
I think, like, I do like the idea of, you know, exploring what happens to someone like him at the end of his career. Yeah. Like, how does he deal with this changing world that he has around him? All of that stuff. I love that. But what we got instead was this broken down human being who is so sad and so depressed.
Yeah.
My heart broke for him. Yeah. I'm like, we did not need that.
No one. You, like how you were saying, like when we were watching the college, like the lecture scenes, like how in the first one and the third one, they're just like looking at
and
him.
And in this, no one is even listening to him. These seats are empty. And I'm just, but that kind of goes with, you know, him. It reflects a lot of like how people think of history and classics and stuff. Even now, you go to, why do half the universities not have any subjects left anymore? We were just talking about it yesterday, where my ex-university, where I finished my bachelor's and a lot of us got our history and archaeology degrees, don't even have those degrees anymore.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, you can see where the start of, so I don't mind that necessarily, but it adds to his sadness.
I was just like, no one's listening.
Listening to him.
That made me so sad. Because I love the girl in the Raiders of the Lost Ark where she blinks and she's like, I love you. That's me. That's basically me. I would do that. So funny. He's just so gorgeous.
Like, he's gone from this really cool professor to like this really sad human being.
Yeah.
And I don't like to see that. I don't like to see him broken down.
Yeah.
I'm okay with him being challenged and being, okay, what next?
Yeah.
But I don't like seeing him broken down. I don't think that was needed to make it compelling, because it wasn't. It didn't actually compel us to think of anything.
It just was like, oh my God, it really felt too sad. And I was like, I can't deal with this.
So I think the thing is, I feel like it's not ruined anything, because modern audiences are very astute in that sense. They're very much like, we can pick and choose what we like and what we not like.
Yeah.
You know, if we want to not acknowledge the last one, we're just not going to acknowledge it. Like we did with The Mummy,
like how
right?
we do with The Mummy. We don't acknowledge the third movie because it's crap. But like, you know, we watch one and two and we love it.
But I think we have to acknowledge the fact that what Indiana Jones has done for this kind of genre.
Yeah.
I feel like Rick O'Connell would not have existed if we did not have Indiana Jones.
Literally, I say this all the time. Like, Rick O'Connell is born from Indiana Jones. Like, he just is. And, like, you can... There's so many elements where I'm like, oh my God, this is like The Mummy. Like, when we were watching it, I was like, oh, The Mummy took, like, you know, inspiration from this. And I was like, that movie could not have existed.
Yeah, no.
Like, our two favorite things now, like, joined together. It's The Mummy and Indiana Jones.
If you want to know a little bit about how crazy we are about The Mummy, go listen to episode 30.
Yes.
Of our podcast. Yeah. But at the same time, we still don't have a character. Like, apart from Rick O'Connell, we don't really have characters like this. But in a way, that's a good thing. Because
he stands out.
He stands out. Yeah. Rick O'Connell stands out because of that. Yeah. Because, you know, there's no one really else like him. Yeah. He's very different to Indiana Jones at the same time. Because he's not actually a scholar.
He's not.
You know?
Evie's the scholar. Yeah.
So, I think it doesn't take away anything from it. It is just sad to see that this is the ending.
Yeah.
That it's not this triumphant end.
And as long as this is the actual now ending.
I hope so. I really hope so.
Maybe in time we'll feel better about it.
I think this is a good place to end it. Please leave us your thoughts about what you thought of the film.
Of Dial of Destiny.
Dial of Destiny. Or any Indiana Jones films or whatever you're thinking.
Tell us which one your favorite is.
Exactly. Tell
Maybe
us which
you
one your favorite is.
Maybe you'll change our opinion on Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Who knows? It's going to be very hard to do that. But anyway.
We always like to hear from you guys. So please go ahead and reach us on our socials. Leave us a comment below. If you can give us a thumbs up and a share or a subscribe, tell your friends all about
us. Smash that little bell icon.
Yes, please. that would be very helpful to us because we're just starting off on YouTube. Just to reiterate, we do have 83 episodes of this podcast. They're just not on YouTube. So we've been around for a while. we're just figuring out this YouTube stuff. We have some other stuff in the works that we're thinking of introducing. Not really maybe... until we reach like 100th episode, but we will keep you guys updated. All our other episodes are available on Spotify, and Apple is a bit of an issue. They're still not updating our podcast, so please go on to Spotify and listen to us there, or listen to us on YouTube.
Apparently we're not the only ones with the Apple
podcast, so there's some issue happening there. I'm not sure what it is. But in the meantime, hope you all have a wonderful week ahead. All right. Talk to you all later.
Bye, guys.